This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Welcome to Crushed by Margaret Caborn Smith, a podcast about the mayhem and madness of unrequited love. My guest today is the hilarious, award-winning stand-up, writer, actress and powerhouse, Sarah Kendall. Yep. Don't snort.
Triple threat Kendall.
Powerhouse definitely counts.
Where did you get that from?
I think it every time I see you.
Is it just the film of sweat that I'm covered
yes.
in? Yeah. That really says power.
It's
yeah.
the wrestling outfit you're yeah. wearing. Yeah. So, Sarah,
yeah.
crushes.
Yes.
Prone to crushes?
Oh, yeah. Very.
How, yeah?
Yeah.
Always have been?
I think until I went into therapy and analysed what a crush is.
How devastating.
Yeah, when you
unpick
the tapestry, it's all your projections.
It's, oh my God.
It's all the projections. And, you know, if you do end up with the person, there's going to be the devastating moment, maybe about 2 years in, where there's this gap between all your projections
yeah.
and who they really are.
I mean, 2 years is pretty good, I'd say.
2 years is a long time. But I certainly, throughout my life, really prone to crushes. And I think a lot of that is what I had projected onto. I'm not sure it had that much to do with the person.
Yes. Yeah. So can you remember your first one?
But what do you mean? Do you mean like earliest memory, or do you mean like the first?
No, like
possible...
the first person that you were, or I was going to say all thing.
Oh wow, he's such an open minded. Thank you. Finally, I can tell that story.
First object of your desire, like where you where you thought, oh, this is different. Not just I like this person, or you know, that there was something.
Yes, and it has to be real world, doesn't it?
Well,
yeah, I mean, yeah, of course.
I don't know, because there are definitely, you know, people have taken this question in different ways, and sometimes people, like, you know, some kids are sexual really early.
I wasn't.
They're like, no, me neither.
I was like 28.
Before you fancied anyone.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Before I figured out that it was like a whole other world. I was a very late bloomer, so I think most of my crushes early on were very romantic.
Yeah.
And if it edged anywhere into the physical, I was quite disgusted.
Yeah.
So, you know, the way I felt about someone, if that led to like a tongue in the mouth, I was like,
oh, yeah, no.
So I think I was surprised when any of my crushes did go into a physical kind of area, because then it didn't kind of align with my kind of, oh, I love them. And then it was like all grunty and boners.
Oh,
and,
no, awful.
Yeah, it's a real shock. You know, it's a shock.
My daughter had to watch a sex education film.
Yes.
And we watched it together.
Oh, what? Why did you do
well,
that?
Well, I'll tell you why. I don't think she'll mind me saying. But basically, she couldn't handle watching it in school.
Yeah.
So her teacher spoke to me and said,
it's shocking. It is so shocking.
Well, do you know what? I don't know about you,
yeah.
but we had very vague.
Ours was vague.
Vague, and like close-ups of ovary diagrams.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
This was film. Close-up of an ejaculating penis.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. And as my friend says, that's always a shock, isn't it?
What did you do?
What did I do? I tried to play it cool, but I think I did go, wow, okay.
Oh,
that's,
I think I would have laughed. Like the...
No, we were sort of laughing as well, which was good, which was the thing I felt she didn't feel able to do in school, was to sort of laugh at it.
Yes.
She was just, oh my God, what is this?
I don't know what to do. As a parent with kids who have access to the internet, I kind of think, well, if I don't tell them, they will Google it.
Yeah, so what are your memories of liking people? Like, you know, it can be really afar, because I know, speaking for me, for a long time, they were as far away as I could possibly be from them. They were safely on the telly.
Yes,
you know.
Yes, that feels right
to
me.
Yeah, I could, you know, I could cut out pictures from the Radio Times and put them in picture frames.
Radio Times?
Yes.
So who are we talking?
Hugh Laurie.
Oh, that's so sweet. And well done.
Thank you. I know. I was vindicated in the end.
That's an incredible career.
Oh, bullied horrendously at the time.
What role? What film?
Well, it's probably Blackadder III and a bit of Brian Lawry.
You're so funny.
Like, no,
that's so cute. Oh, my God. I think in a very similar way, mine were sort of... I had a real thing about Alan Alda on MASH.
Oh, you can't mock me.
No.
In that case,
no,
actually,
no.
To be fair, he was pretty...
I don't know what he...
He was really funny.
Yeah.
And he was a bit... He was naughty.
He was naughty.
This character. I'm presuming it was the character of Hawkeye rather than Alan Alda, the
actor. It was Hawkeye. I mean, I think, if anything, that spoke more to my comedic instincts.
Yes.
That I was like, that's just the funny person in the room that... And even...
Is getting
the
attention.
That's getting lots of attention. But also, you know, there is that kind of, you know, MASH always had that kind of... There'd be a dark thing happen and then, like, you know, there would, you know, it'd be lightened a little bit. And so I think I was very attracted to that sort of... persona, like the clown. I even had a thing when I read Catcher in the Rye. I kind of went, I just wished I could meet Holden Caulfield, and like I thought that maybe that was romantic. I don't know.
Yeah, but is it romantic? Was that an identity thing? Was that a projection thing?
I felt like
do you want to be him?
No, I felt like I'd finally
help him.
I felt like I was as miserable as him. I was like, oh, I feel not miserable enough to be like put into an institution as he was in the end. But I thought, because all the boys that I knew were so stupid. And then I thought, here's a boy who I could actually like be interested in. I'm not seeing any of the boys like this. I was only sort of seeing the silly boys and the boys who were kind of, you know, I wasn't meeting anyone like Holden Caulfield.
Yeah. Were there any boys in real life? I mean, I understand nobody matches up to Holden Caulfield, really, particularly at that age. Although I do sometimes think maybe inside they feel like Holden Caulfield, because I don't know what we were projecting, but it probably wasn't.
I can't imagine. I cannot.
Now, go on. What do you think you were projecting at that time? Did people have crushes on you?
Oh, no, I do not think so. No.
Revealed.
I wasn't. I've seen... look, the photographic evidence would suggest... I don't think I was crush material. Like, there was a group of girls at my school. Were you at a co-ed school?
No, not later.
Right.
Primary school.
Right.
Yeah.
Mine was a co-ed school, and there was a group of girls who were, like, the crush material.
Mm-hmm.
I was not.
I mean, even in my school there was that. But...
Okay. Yeah, well, of course, it's Catholic girls' school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a lot of it about.
Yeah. I had a crush on a guy called Piccolo Willoughby.
I mean...
You're going to find that guy.
That's not the made-up name.
I know, it's not. I swear to God. That's not a Google whack, by the way. You'll get Piccolo Willoughby. Yeah, his parents were hippies. He had a brother called...
Named after a sort of pathetic musical instrument.
No one plays. Who plays the piccolo?
Yeah, nobody.
Literally no one plays the piccolo.
I suppose people are called viola, aren't they? And we don't mock them.
Oh, yeah, we do. So yes,
Piccolo Willoughby.
Piccolo
we need
Willoughby.
To know more about him.
He was lovely.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So a bit
great
more
guy.
Like
really great. Guy.
Holden Caulfield. No,
I don't think he had the darkness of Holden Caulfield. No, he was just a really lovely guy, and I was very good friends with him. But then I think when we were about 15, we did have a kiss, and then after the kiss, I went, oh, like I was so embarrassed. I was so embarrassed.
It is embarrassing.
Yeah, and I
was that your first kiss.
No.
Oh, my
first kiss. My first kiss. You're going to think I've made the story up.
Brilliant.
Okay. It's so bad. It's really, and it's also child endangerment. I mean, I was 15.
Okay, before you start, I should say that one time I did a play that was quite young men and women in it, and the director thought it would be a fun thing if we all went round the circle and talked about our first kiss. And oh my God, it was not fun. All the boys had, lovely, fine. She was in the class. All the girls had horrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was taken advantage of. Oh, that's so funny. Oh, that's
horrendous.
Awful. I mean, it's not funny. It's,
no.
Oh, God.
Go on, I mean, child endangerment.
Okay, so I was 15 years old. I had just got my braces off. And I went to the mall on a Thursday night with my friend. And this guy came over and he went, my God, you're beautiful. And I was like, and then I can't remember what happened, but we exchanged phone numbers. And then he said, what's your name? And I said, my name, I told him my name. Like all the things that like.
No, I know, but you're 15.
I was 15 and I was getting interest from a guy, which I thought
exciting.
Was the.
Oh, and that's the goal, isn't it?
That's the goal. I mean, you know,
even
one
if
of.
You don't enjoy it. It's
no,
like, oh,
one of the gods has gazed upon you. And this, he was such a dipshit. And then he said that his name was Daniel LeBranigan. Like he completely invented everything, right? I told my mum I'd been asked out on a date, and she was like, "How wonderful!" Like, not who goes up to a kid?
What?
Yeah, in a mall.
In a mall.
Anyway,
watching you take your braces out.
Oh God. Anyway, so on the day of the date, my friend Claire came around to my house, and she like held up a pillow, and she made out with the pillow. She's like, "This is how you make out." And then she threw me the pillow, and I was like,
"Oh God!"
Made out with the pillow, went like that, and she went, "Yeah, ish." She was so much. She had so much more experience than me. And then I got dressed up, and I put together the most like insane outfit. I had my dad's waistcoat on, and a pair of denim jeans, and a big jacket on. She was like, "What are you wearing?" And then she sort of gave me a normal jumper and stuff. And then my mum drove me to
normal jumper. That's the level of
that was the best
date.
I could hope for. I don't know what I was dressing like. I don't know. I had no idea. I think I was dressing like Annie Hall.
Oh, lovely. Yeah,
that was sort of my goal, but I just didn't do it right. Anyway, and who 15-year-old dressing like Annie Hall? It just didn't work at all. Anyway, so my mum dropped me off at this bus stop in town, and then waited across the street in the car. Daniel LeBranigan doesn't show up. Right, he doesn't show up. We're sitting. My mum's waiting in the car for an hour and a half with Claire Fitzgerald in the car with her. I get back in the car. We go home.
How long were you there for?
I wait for an hour and a half.
Oh my God, yeah. That is a long time.
Anyway, we go home, and this is back in the days of telephones.
Yeah,
I ring him because I'm like really upset. I don't know why. Why did anyone just go? Don't ring. Just walk away.
Like,
but I did. I rang, and I'm really hurt. And then he was like, sorry, I was surfing and I lost my watch. I'll come and meet you now. So I went.
Your mum took you back there?
Yeah.
But to be fair, your mum, if that was me, I'd just be like, I've got no, I'm so out of my depth here. I don't know. What am I supposed to be doing? Should I be saying to her, just no?
Yeah, no. I would. Yeah. I would. I'd go like, "This is, okay, if they don't turn up, that's a bad start.
Yeah, it's a bad start.
You can't bring
that's
it back from there.
Not a good enough excuse.
You can't change the course of this.
Surf watch thing.
No.
No.
Anyway, so he turns up and my friends, they agreed to spy on us to keep me safe. How is there no parental responsibility here? So I go and meet this guy, Daniel LeBranigan, who the more I see him in broad daylight, I'm like 30, at least.
Do you
30.
Think? Oh, God.
Yeah, but in the sort of in the mall lighting, he didn't look 30, but I'm seeing him in broad daylight going, oh, shit. Anyway, and then I said, how old are you? And he said, I'm 18. And he just wasn't 18. He just wasn't 18. Anyway, so we're going along the outdoor mall and looking in shops and stuff, and my friends are three shops back watching us. That's my safety police. And then he stops, we're walking together, and we stop outside, and it was the New South Wales State Bank. That was the bank, I remember it. It's a small town. And he stops, and then he kind of held my face in his hands, and I thought, oh, God, it's...
Time.
It's time. It's going to happen.
Pillow face.
It's midday.
Oh, God.
I'm outside the State Bank in a small town where my dad's business partner's probably in there doing business. Anyway, so he stops me. And then as he approaches me, his tongue is already out. I can see
God.
The tongue's out before he's even got to my face.
Oh, this is why he can't get a girlfriend of his own age.
Oh, well, yeah. I suspect he's in prison. Anyway, so then I mean, it wasn't even a kiss. I don't know what he did like to my face. It was just so bad. It was the worst kiss. Mm. And then he kind of like pulled away and I sort of discreetly wiped the spit off my face. And then he said... Was that your first kiss? And I said, yes.
Was it a kiss?
I said, was that a kiss?
That's what it was.
If we're going to call, if we can agree on what the facts are here. He said, is that your first kiss? And I said, yeah. And then he went, yeah, I could tell. Yeah.
Oh.
Anyway, then my friends, I can hear my friends laughing. I can hear my friends across the street laughing. They watched the whole thing and were killing themselves laughing. So whilst this was happening, my two closest friends were across the street just pissing themselves.
Yeah.
Because I can't imagine what it looked like.
No.
Anyway, then we all, then they kind of revealed themselves and went, we've been watching you guys the whole time. How was it, Sarah? Like, I mean, I just.
So that was a disappointing first kiss.
It was
safe to say.
It was
horrendous.
Awful. It was awful.
So yeah. with Piccolo, like you genuinely liked him and he
I
was
did.
Your
and
age.
He was a lovely kisser as well.
Oh, was he?
He was a lovely kisser and he was like the smartest guy in school. It was a really lovely guy.
So what, but the kiss did also put you off somehow?
Well, the kiss, it just
wasn't what you were.
I didn't know how to be physical comfortably.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know how to. All of it felt so strange and alien and didn't line up with romantic love as I understood romantic love. And everything that I'd seen in cinema. In terms of like even movies like 16 Candles and all the sort of things about romance and kissing and stuff, it doesn't prepare you for the shock of it. I think it is quite shocking when you get physically intimate with another person.
Yeah, even when you do really like them and really fancy them. Although maybe that doesn't happen. till maybe there's a lot of experimentation before you actually have
that
you know you genuinely have a connection with, and that's a completely different,
I think,
exciting thing.
Also, kissing leads to other, like other feelings.
Yes, it does sometimes.
That was the funniest thing you could have. Yes, it does sometimes. And I think I found that quite because I was quite a late developer, the kissing wasn't leading to those other feelings that kind of are the natural consequence of the kissing. You know, like that's meant to kind of. So anytime it would get into that realm, I'd go, I'm sort of not feeling this. I'm not and I found it a bit, not that these were bad guys, but
no.
I found it very confronting. I found it a bit sort of. I'm not in the same space that you're in right now because the guys do, you know, that sort of their excitement was palpable.
Yeah, that's a good word.
Yes.
Yeah.
Whereas I felt I'm not quite in your zone
but
right
are
now.
You, so this, I mean, with Piccolo specifically, had you had a crush on him? Like, had you imagined?
I had.
So you'd imagined kissing him? Had you imagined doing more?
I had total romantic. But I don't think my romantic love included sex.
Yes, that's the interesting bit, isn't it? That you. That there's, I don't know, like, were you thinking marriage or were you just sort of picturing a very, you know, is it a domestic thing or was it more of a tempestuous?
Torture. I think it was tortured. I love you and you'll never know.
Yeah.
It was almost.
So once they know
and
they like you back, that's ruined all of the.
Gross. And I think I very early on had the Woody Allen. I don't want, no, not Woody Allen, Groucho Marx. I don't want to be a member of any club that would have me as a member.
Yeah.
And I think I loathe myself. So as soon as anyone returned it, I'd be like, the fuck is wrong with you? Whoa. Loser alert.
Yeah.
So I think that it was kind of, it had a lot to do with my own lack of confidence that I didn't want the feelings back. The whole idea is that you're meant to be so great, I can't attain you.
Yeah.
If I can attain you, what is that?
but presumably you weren't aware that that's what you were doing at that time.
No. I just kept on having crushes on unattainable people. Like, that was a real.
How unattainable did you go?
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, how far away
like
could
Hollywood?
They be? Yeah, I'm interested in what people do about their crushes, because some people are very active and are like, right, we are tracking this person down.
Oh, God.
And some people are just happy to
make
collages.
Yes, mine was collage. Mine was no contact or minimal contact.
Less contact once you've chosen your crush.
Essentially, I should have been a pen pal to someone on death row and married them.
I mean, yeah, what's the thinking
I mean,
there?
That's the sweet spot.
That's the real sweet
that
spot.
That is, I think that was a real through line. That, and then as soon as it was reciprocated, I just was like, I don't know what to do with this. And
but you managed when it was reciprocated, so you'd managed to tell them, or that someone else had told them. Like, were you?
I think we were spending a lot of time together.
Yeah,
and a kiss naturally
it
occurred.
Became obvious. That
and
you
then I suddenly
did.
Went, oh, this has become physical. I don't know. And I do think part of it was my maturity, because I had friends who were sexually active by that stage. Like, I had friends with boyfriends and they were using contraception. Yeah. Like, and for me, a kiss was quite, whoa, that's a tongue, it's in my mouth. Oh, God. So I think, I think that was certainly, I think it was a maturity issue and it was a confidence issue.
Because I remember watching, friends of mine who, like my best friend when we were sort of 15, always had boyfriends, was very sexually active early and whatever. And I think I was jealous, but I was sort of jealous of wanting it even. I don't know, I was jealous of what it was supposed, what it was she was experiencing, but I wasn't thinking, I want.
Right.
I never really had that thing with a boy where I was like, I mean, I did, but quite a bit later.
Oh, it's
very slow.
Yes,
you know?
It took me years for any impulse to become like a libidinous impulse.
Yes,
there was nothing. I didn't have a libido. I didn't want, like, I had friends who could not wait. They just, they were ready. Whereas for me, I just, and I think my parents were absolutely delighted. They were like, brilliant.
Yeah.
She's a dork. She's like fantastic. Because, the relief of having a dork daughter, you're like, oh, thank God.
It's better.
Oh, good. I think that was very fostered, like in my persona in the house. I think that was very much a part of my kind of, my brother was this kind of,
can't get enough of the ladies.
Yeah. And I was like the bookish one.
Yeah.
And I think you get those roles designated early,
It's weird, isn't it? Because even if you are bookish, I don't know, how did you feel about Alan Alda? Did you fancy Alan Alda?
No.
No.
No, I didn't fancy him.
Did you have any crushes on, the sort of Hollywood, like, I'm trying to think of our era, Michael J. Fox.
I had them all on my wall. I mean, they were all over my wall. So I had Tom Cruise, Michael J. Fox, Kirk Cameron, the religious nut.
Oh, Cameron. God, I haven't heard that name.
Remember Kirk Cameron?
Yes.
Oh, I adored it. But I mean, all these guys are just like, it might as well be the picture that came with the photo frame. It's all it is.
And so were you pretending to like them or did you admire them aesthetically, or
I didn't have any idea of what the alternative was.
Yeah.
So any magazine I bought was a bunch of pictures which already had love hearts drawn around them.
Like
the
posters. We were so told, weren't we? We were so informed.
Yeah.
This is attractive.
This is what you are attracted to. You can't have it, but you will put these posters on your look. It's a poster. Maybe put it on your wall. And we related to this because we were given, it was like an instruction guide.
Yeah.
And it was a very heterosexual instruction guide. I mean, I had no idea that there was any alternative. And even that alternative was barely spoken about. It was like saying, I might also one day go to Mars. Like, it was so, I probably did know gay people, but didn't know that.
Well, they didn't know. Yeah.
Or there was like one guy who you're like, of course he's gay, he's my friend. But I didn't have a sort of alternate narrative. Whereas I look at the way my daughter talks about, the way they are, like, they understand the thousands of different narratives that surround it.
So quickly as well.
So fast.
They don't have a problem with it at all.
No, it's not even like a talking point.
No.
Whereas, the whole template that had been sort of handed was, well, this is who you are, this is what you are. And I wasn't able to look at that honestly until very recently, Margaret, very recently.
Yeah.
Which has been really, we grew up in a really different era and it's almost hard to make sense of it now given how far we've come. But when you do look at it, I get a bit emotional sort of talking about it because I haven't spoken about this anywhere. Like I've been out like with my friends and family for years now. Like it's been a couple of years now. Mm-hmm. So everyone I mix with and my friends and I work with, like it's not a secret, but I haven't sort of in any public way said it. And a lot of that has been because I've got kids and, and you sort of got to come out together.
Yeah,
like when you come out when you're my age, you don't just sort of go, it's just me. It's not me. It's, you know, and I had to make absolutely certain that this was okay, that that was okay, you know, with, you know, and talking to my daughter about it. And I said to her, look, I'm doing this podcast and I've never spoken about it publicly, but how would you feel if I did? And she said, I think you should. I think it's really, do it. And I needed to hear that from her before I could, because
of course,
this is something that I've had to get my head around it, but also, you know, people very close to me have had to get their head around it. I haven't actually specifically said I'm gay. And what's interesting about all this is that I haven't actually said it in any of this sort of rambling. But yeah, looking back on it, saying it all out loud, you go, oh wow, that was someone who didn't have any idea of any other version of what they were allowed to look like.
Yeah.
I think also the self-loathing and the romantic love and the rest of it was quite true. But
yeah,
none
of it helps.
No. Mm. But I didn't. I also didn't look around in the media and see anyone. I mean, I think there was Martina Navratilova. I think that was it.
Yeah.
And I think I just didn't look around and go, oh, that's, oh, this is okay. This is who I am, and this is what I, you know, I maybe they were and I didn't see it. Like, that's the other thing. Like,
no,
maybe they were there but
they're not visible. They're not obvious. It's not a kind
no,
of...
No, and often very punchline-y, you know.
Oh,
that
God,
was,
yeah.
That was the other thing. It was always, like, funny.
Like, yeah. It was, yeah, it's a joke.
Yeah, so it was either the kind of, you know, certainly in a sort of conservative upbringing, you know, you've either got the whoopsie, like that kind of, or...
Yeah.
Oh, it's Butch Dykes,
hilarious,
you can't get a woman.
Yeah,
exactly. So I don't think I had any idea that there was any other way. So I just sort of, I think I just shut the whole thing down and kind of went, oh, okay, I'm meant to have pictures of Kirk Cameron on my wall.
We'll do the Kirk Cameron
and
route.
I got a big poster of Cocktail. I got Tom Cruise in Cocktail. What a guy he was. Imagine holding that up as a romantic idea to children. Teenage girls. Like, just, oh, my God.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp Therapy Online. What's the first thing you would do if you had an extra hour in your day? I won't lie, I'm thinking nap. Or if I'm already getting a nap, a longer nap. A lot of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but do you ever think about what you would do with it if you did have unlimited time? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to work out what's important and then prioritize it. Therapy can help you pin down what matters to you so you can do more of it. The therapy that I've done has been massively helpful with untangling my thoughts in order to make sense of them, so they're not just a clump of anxious screams sitting in my stomach. Therapy isn't about changing who you are as a person, but helping you to find coping strategies for the horrors our lives and our brains throw at us. And the healthier we are mentally, the better we feel physically. If therapy sounds like something you could use, why not give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, so it's convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, so no travel time necessary. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a registered therapist and switch therapists anytime for an additional charge. With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/crush. That's betterhelp.com/crush.
I spoke to Chris Neal, who was talking about being gay when he was younger, and saying that he was saying that crushes, quite a lot of the time, they are about projecting a future. And he said, there wasn't a future. I didn't have an example of a happy gay couple that
of
I could
course.
Go, I'm going to... That's what my future looks like. So he was just like, I had no idea.
In the 80s, the whole narrative was HIV.
Oh, God, yeah.
Like, any sort of media thing was, like, the HIV panic or, like, in some way that's where it would circle back to. And I think it's really interesting seeing the amount of retrospective pieces of work being done about the 80s. You know, like, It's a Sin is a really good example.
Mm-hmm.
like young, I think for young people, they don't quite realise like
no.
how that was for the gay community and how it demonised them.
Oh my God. Yeah, Clause 28.
Oh my God.
Just between those. And I was brought up in a liberal household. But yeah, it was, so I didn't think I was affected by that. I wasn't told being gay is wrong or anything, the Clause 28 and the HIV, don't die of ignorance stuff, that was enough to be ingrained in me forever that there's an issue.
Yeah,
there.
You get all these sort of, it's almost like you're getting all these really subtle green lights and red lights when you're growing up, and they're constant and they're forming all these synapses, and green feels good and red feels bad. And I think particularly if you're a certain type of person, perhaps applause driven.
That's a really nice euphemism.
The green lights feel good. So you move towards the green lights, and then you don't think about how you actually feel, but you're going,
what you actually want.
Yeah. Had a lot of therapy and stuff. But it's almost like there's a room full of doors, and there was this door, and I did not want to open it, and I didn't want to know what was inside it, because I was very frightened of what was behind that door. And so I wallpapered over it, and then I put a chair in front of it, and I went, there's not even a door there. There's the
what door?
What door? Are you mad? There's merely a chair and a lamp.
How early on do you think you did that?
Oh, from the earliest, because of the way it was, the way gayness was spoken about from a very early age. You go, this could cost me love. God. Like the cost of it. I don't think I even, before I even had the slightest impulse, like I didn't even have a sexuality, but I knew very early on that if it went in that direction, this could be very costly. Like there's a lot at stake here. And I don't think that this happens when you're a sexual being. It happens way before.
No, absolutely.
So if you're already kind of not real, as I say, I was a really late developer, that was okay. I wasn't going, damn it, I want to be gay. I didn't have any impulse, but that really suited me. That suited me down to the ground. I don't know. I think we sort of, that's why I sort of like when I'm talking to my kids, I'm like, every conversation is so important. Yeah. They have to know everything's okay. Like, I just worry, because you're like...
You can get it wrong.
Oh, and I am getting it wrong. Without a doubt. Are. You know, and I my parents are really loving parents. Like, this was not... they were both brought up by World War II veterans.
I know. That whole generation has PTSD.
There's only so much that I can, we've had a lot of discussions about this, and I do have to move past that thing of they did the best that they could at the time, and they didn't, there was a whole lot of stuff they didn't know, and it was 30 years ago, there has to be a kindness of going.
Absolutely. They were doing their best.
Yes. Having been raised by a RAF jet fighter.
Yeah, I know him.
He fights guys called Jeff and rats. It's a thing in Australia, it doesn't matter. These were very sort of right-wing militaristic. This was way out of their depth, And I think there was another thing that, but how can you be gay? You don't look like, I think there was an expectation that if you were gay, that you'd just come in on a Harley with a shaved head. So they're like, but you have long hair. What do you mean? I think I don't want to make out like I wasn't brought up by loving, because they are incredibly loving and really supportive.
No, but
parents.
Yeah, you're right. They come from their society in the same way that we do, and we'll be getting things wrong,
I don't even want to know what we're getting wrong.
I know. Well, we're not going to see for ages.
We just won't know what it is. It'll be something that I go, oh, God, yeah, okay. So yeah, I feel like I don't want this to be like a me sort of trash talking my parents, because it absolutely
no, it doesn't
isn't.
Sound like it at no. all. And obviously, it's not just down to your parents. You know, they weren't making you put pictures of Kirk Cameron.
No, that was my decision. That was me. That was all me. I thought Growing Pains was a great show. I can't defend that. It led to the ascent of Robin Thicke.
Did it?
Robin Thicke's dad was the Alan Thicke is the dad on Growing Pains.
Oh my God, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the guy who sang Blurred Lines, that's his. So, that's, you know, like there's a chain of atrocities here. And the source of it's Kirk Cameron. Anyway, look, I didn't come here to just talk about Kirk Cameron. But yeah, look, I think, but I also think there is a level of role play in all of it.
Yes, certainly, in all crushes, yeah. I'd say. You know, we talk about identity and how much you're looking. And I think, particularly with girls, they're looking at something and thinking, because really, I loved Hugh Laurie, but really I wanted to be Hugh Laurie. Yeah. I wanted to be a white male sketch comedian.
Yeah. I mean, it was a good era for white male Oxbridge sketch comedians.
Yeah, yeah.
Sweet spot.
But I couldn't, because that wasn't available to me. It's like, oh, well, I'll hang my hat on this, because that's sort of as close as I can get to it.
And if we get dark about it, that is like how we relate to power in a way that you go, what's my way in with the a crush?
Yes.
Is it a crush? Is that my way
in? Yeah. And then I can be attached to them somehow, and then I'm in that world. Is that how that
That's
works?
How male stand-up comedians score after the show. We've just unraveled that.
I think
the crush being the thing that you want to be, it was a huge part of it. Like, you know, my crushes were more. It was more about who I was interested in becoming, and the traits that I wanted to have. I'm trying to think of any of my other sort of notable. Like, I went through a phase where I was. It wasn't a crush, but I became obsessed with the works of Dustin Hoffman. I was down at Video Easy, like, renting a new Dustin Hoffman film, like, every week.
Do you think you've seen them all?
I think I have.
Wow, okay.
There's a couple that I'm having trouble. There's a movie, a really early one of his called. And it was just before The Graduate, and it was called Who is Harry Kellerman and Why is He Saying These Things About Me?
Oh, I've seen the title of it. But
I mean, getting that in Newcastle in 1988 was not...
No, Video Easy. They didn't have that.
But I just sort of methodically went through the works of, you know, and...
That's really interesting, because that's a real obsessive, kind of completist thing, and I did a lot of that.
Yes.
As well.
That's really interesting. What do you mean, in that you're going, I've just got to get to the end of
the
body of work?
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, in order to call myself a fan, I need to have more knowledge and have gathered all of this intel and watched some pretty terrible films or, listened to all of these B-sides and,
Do you remember, when you sort of first really got into film or comedy or sketch or whatever, and... when the videotape would end, you're like, oh, God, I'm back in the real world.
Oh, God, yeah.
I want to be where everything's more vivid and it's more interesting.
Yeah.
And I'd feel crushed at the end of it. Like, but this is reality and it's so bleh.
Yes. Awful.
Yeah. And then I'd see movies like, you know, The Graduate or Rain Man or, like, you know, he was really sort of, you know, Kramer versus Kramer and Tootsie and...
Yeah.
Though I just completely existed in this kind of fandom Dustin Hoffman world, you know.
And what was it about him that...
I think it's because he was really funny.
Yeah.
He's so funny. I mean, he's a bit... I think he's also been me too'd.
Yeah.
I mean, just name anyone you like and they've been me too'd.
Yeah.
It's so tricky.
It's the worst for us, I think.
It's heartbreaking for us.
it's really,
really hard
upsetting.
For us. But he was one of those people who, like, he's just really funny. And he's, an incredible actor, but his comedic instincts are just impeccable.
And do you think that was, you wanted to be that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, when you're being funny, you don't have to deal with any of the other, it's not about pretty or sexy.
Yeah.
I mean, for a lot of male comedians, it is about sex. But if you're a woman in comedy, it is actually a, like,
It's so immediate comedy. It's so, I was thinking this about, because I didn't ever do any serious work, but there's such a good, you just know when you've won.
Yeah.
Like you do a performance. You're right. If you don't get a laugh, then you've slightly failed.
Yes.
You know, and, you know, I did a play recently and there was a bit that I was, that I didn't get a laugh from for the first week or whatever, and it was killing me, and I worked out how to do it.
Oh.
And I can't tell you that the joy, and nobody else gave a shit.
I'd be like,
I'm trying to get this, I'm trying to get this to work, and I'm saying it like this. Now I'm going to bring on this piece of paper, you know.
Yeah.
But getting that to work was more important than any of the rest of it, more important than the truth of my performance.
Oh,
or
I don't care about truth.
No. I just need to get my laughs.
I mean, it's you're right.
It's not a great.
No, I think it's. I mean, it's a true meritocracy, and there aren't many.
No, and like, there's
our world is filled with like the complete opposite of meritocracy. So there is something about these really clear parameters, and the sort of gladiatorial. You're either going to win or you lose, and you'll know if you've won, and you're definitely going to know if you've lost.
Yeah.
So then, when you do rescue a joke, but I mean, I think that was a space that I was obsessed with, and I was really obsessed with Lucille Ball, and I got so interested in comedians and their performances, and really different, like, you know, to like someone performing at the level of Lucille Ball is so different from like a performance like Tootsie. It's a really stylistically, but I was just, I don't know, I just.
But it's funny, you say stylistically, and you're right, but their technique, like they are so technically amazing, both of those people. You wouldn't sort of go, Lucille Ball and Dustin Hoffman, match made in heaven. But I mean, now that I say that, I'd love to see something with both in it. They both care and they both have all this detail in their work.
I think, I think that was like a. You know, I know I'm here to talk about crushes and I'm not talking about crushes. but I think that was always just the thing that I was so much more interested in. I just wasn't, it was just so much more interesting to me than anything else. And even the sort of underlying sort of none of that sitting right, I'd just go, well, fuck, who cares? I'm just, you know, like, I'm just, this is what I'm interested in anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, but I wonder if it's the very factiness of comedy compared to the very vagueness of love and sex and emotion and just how uncertain all of that is, and you can't guarantee any of it.
Yeah, I think that's really. God, you're a good therapist. My therapist, if she hears this, she's gonna feel like I'm cheating on her. Sorry, Biddy. No, it's true. You're right. It's a far more controllable arena. But I wonder. I mean, it's also there is something about it that I can't quite put my finger on it. But there is something about live performances, and certainly with stand up and live work, that is very very similar to. The dating world, in that you're presenting, you've put together the bits of you that work, or you've weaponized the bits that don't work to make them.
Oh my god, yeah, that's so true.
Yeah, so you actually become a very manipulative person. Like I have had,
hopefully just on stage. Or...
I know. I disagree. I think socially, comedians.
Oh no, you're right.
Very
you're
manipulative.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and one person constitutes an audience, doesn't it? That's
absolutely.
The
I've done the Edinburgh Fringe enough times to know that that's a show. Oh, we're going ahead. I do. I think we learn to twist ourselves into whatever pretzel shape needs to be presented to be liked. Because it is being liked.
Yeah, it's
like
is.
The laughter and the being liked thing, it's all the
You're
same.
You're therapizing me now.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not nice.
It. It's really not.
I had to say to my therapist, if I start trying to make you laugh, stop me. Because I'm.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's such a good point.
Yeah. I said to her, I'm trying to control you. Like, I am literally trying to control you if I'm trying to make you laugh. So you have to cut that shit off.
That's amazing. Because I had the sort of opposite thing the other day where I was thinking, if my husband ever stops trying to make me laugh, I'll just be like, oh, he doesn't love me anymore.
No, he's found someone else. He's absolutely found someone else. And it's true of me. Like, if I, like...
Yeah, no, you need to... I had an amazing thing... I can't remember who it was, annoyingly. It was a musician. Someone said, did you chat your wife up when you first met her? And he said, I'm still chatting her up now.
Oh, God, yes.
I love that. Yeah. But it's true. Like, if you lose interest, it's a fine line, though, isn't it? Because it's sort of doing the manipulating thing.
Yeah.
But you need to be able to be not funny too.
Yes.
In your relationships.
Yes, yes. I think the really important thing is being able to show how weak you are. That's the tough thing.
Yeah.
Showing weakness is, and I think, you know, we do this sort of equal and opposite reaction. I do. Whenever I'm showing my strength, that's when I'm absolutely on my knees at my weakest. It's just everything's gone to shit.
Noted.
Yeah. If I'm crying and sweaty and I don't feel well, that's me presenting the truth.
Yeah, there it is.
But yeah, I do think that the sort of the role play aspect of stand up, it just teaches you all these ways to again, it's the green lights and the warm applause, and yeah, you move towards that, and after years and years and years you constantly
and you're right, you're editing things out that aren't appealing,
right,
to
right,
to
it doesn't
an
get
audience.
A laugh, they don't like me, because when you don't get a laugh you feel like they don't like you.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you go, okay, this is here are the things about me that people don't like. Right, okay, right. I'm going to just
right,
Sarah, yeah. I think we should do the science. Mm. And I'm going to suggest it's Piccolo Willoughby, just because the name,
no one's ever going to forget,
is incredible.
I wonder where Piccolo is these days. I know I could find that out very easily,
possibly by the end of this. So do you, interestingly, because you're Australian, I believe.
Mm, I am Australian.
Did you have this, I don't know if you know about the science of this, this finding out if you...
I just turned up to talk to you because I like you.
Okay. Yeah. So there's a special thing that people of our age in this country used to do, where you have the names, your name and the person.
Oh, yeah,
you love.
I know this, but I never worked out how to do it.
L-O-V-E-S.
Oh, yeah, I never... Right, okay.
So L's, so many L's here.
Yeah, a lot of L's. We're L rich.
Piccolo, does that have one L? Or?
I never found out.
Okay. You didn't love him that much.
No,
then.
I did not. I'm not a details guy.
Except when it comes to Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah.
One, two. I always feel the pressure. I'm not good at maths. So,
I can say that. I'm watching this. It's like A Beautiful Mind, but the opposite.
I love you. Hold on. Sophie's telling us.
Oh,
Piccolo Willoughby is a senior general... He's an Australian government solicitor.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, you did law.
There you go. Well, yeah. I'm sorry to tell you.
Yeah,
maybe
what?
It's a good thing. It's 17%.
That feels about right. For
listen,
a kiss
it's better
between...
than what's his name, Branigan. LeBranigan.
Daniel LeBranigan.
Luckily, that wasn't his real name anyway, let's face it.
I know. So. I just don't know how he ended up with LeBranigan. I mean, that's incredible.
That's a panicked.
Yeah.
That's a panic.
LeBranigan-son.
LeBranigan-son. LeBranigan-son.
Fred Menfrenchenson.
What's
that?
Sarah, it's from A Fish Called Wonder.
Yes! Fred Menfrenchenson.
We're going to stop this podcast and carry on talking.
Just talking about
you.
Movies.
Yeah, talking about movies. Sure. Thank you very much, Sarah Kendall.
Thank you, Margaret. That was a joy.
Oh,
thank you.
Thank you.
Crushed by Margaret Caborn Smith was hosted by Margaret Caborn Smith and produced by Sophie Black. Thanks to everyone at the amazing TVC Soho. And if you enjoy the podcast, please remember to like and subscribe, as it helps people find where we are.